Oxford Society for International Development. Welcome back to our podcast series. My name is Caitlin Smith and I'm the president of Oxford in my third year studying history. I'm delighted to be kicking off the podcast today with Ruby Weaver, co-founder of Our Generation for Inclusive Peace. Our Generation for Inclusive Peace is a youth-led research and advocacy collective grounded in intersectional feminist principles and methodologies. They listen to and amplify the voices of young people with the ultimate aim to disrupt the current elitist structures that deny meaningful youth participation. Having recently completed an MSc in Women, Peace and Security at the London School of Economics, Ruby's passions lie in international peace and security, gender equality and human rights. Currently, Ruby has background in peace building and conflict prevention policy and programming, working with international NGOs and donor institutions. In 2019, she and a small group from her MSc Women, Peace and Security cohort founded Our Generation for Inclusive Peace in order to work against ageism, racism, sexism, transphobia, homophobia and ableism in peace and security and towards making current structures, policy and practice in peace and security spaces more inclusive, intersectional and decolonised. Today on the podcast, we'll be taking a closer look at Our Generation for Inclusive Peace and how it seeks to diversify the voices shaping peace and security policy. Thanks so much for joining me, Ruby. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me on, Caitlin. It's great to be here.
So, before speaking about Our Generation for Inclusive Peace more specifically, would it be all right if you start by painting a picture of peace and security sector as it currently exists?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is obviously a huge international infrastructure that is set up around peace and security spaces in order to respond to conflict. And this can range from the global military complex to local peace-building civil society organisations. And all of these different organisations and institutions have different priorities and approaches that shape how they respond to conflict. So most policy on conflict is then formulated in these high-level forums, such as the UN, for example, in which multilateral organisations and donor governments are able to decide and prioritise how, where and when to respond to conflict. Because of these structures, more often than not, priority conflicts are the ones in which external powers have vested interests, whether that's geopolitical, national security, or commercial. So furthermore, the makeup of these institutions with the decision-making power and with the funds to distribute are dominated, generally speaking, by white, male, older voices. And we operate in institutional structures that are primarily located in the global north, which leads to structures which fundamentally are neo-colonial and patriarchal. The current system where decisions are made at the top in these kind of institutions means that funding then slowly trickles down to the peace builders and activists on the ground, with little cuts being taken off at various different levels. And that means that what we're doing is working in a system that isn't built by or for those most impacted by conflict. And it certainly doesn't facilitate the meaningful participation of people who are from conflict-affected areas and doing so much work in conflict-affected contexts to be able to meaningfully participate in these spaces. What that means is that these grassroots organisations have to adopt the agendas and the language of global institutions in order to be able to secure the funding and be able to operate. And that's really where Our Generation for Inclusive Peace, or OGIP, sees the need for change. What we envisage is a future where the voices and the needs of young people, and in particular young women, in all of their diversity, are centred in peace and security spaces.
That's really interesting, especially looking at the neo-colonial and the patriarchal elements of development. And the UN as well has recognised this and the need to diversify these voices. So in 2000, they set up Women, Peace and Security Agenda. And in 2015, the Youth, Peace and Security Agenda. Is it all right if you tell us a little bit more about these agendas and how Our Generation for Inclusive Peace aims to function at the intersect of the two of them?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, these are the two policy agendas that OGIP really sees as central to our mission. Like you say, the Women, Peace and Security Agenda, or WPS, was initiated in the year 2000 by the UN Security Council. So they passed Resolution 1325, which recognised the disproportionate and distinct impact of conflict on women, and also the importance of women's role in resolving conflict and building peace. And what it did was lay out a structure or an agenda based on four pillars, so prevention, participation, protection, and relief and recovery. Since 2000, a further 9 resolutions have been passed by the UN Security Council under the WPS umbrella, each of them building on those four pillars. So it's really grown into this huge international policy agenda with a lot of interest and a lot of talk, but not necessarily that much implementation. And this year is the 20th anniversary, and so there's a lot of talk currently in international policy spaces about how we meet that implementation gap. In a similar way, the Youth, Peace and Security Agenda, which was also passed by the UN Security Council in 2015, has sort of built on the same kind of model as the WPS Agenda, has similar sort of core strategies, and really recognises the need to acknowledge the voices of young people in conflict and the distinct impact of conflict on their lives. For example, the impact of conflict on their childhood or access to education, to name just a few. The YPS agenda now has 2 further resolutions. The most recent one was actually passed just last month. So it's a more nascent agenda, but it's certainly growing in terms of its importance. And both agendas are hugely linked. So like I say, they've got a lot of similarities in terms of their core strategies, their commitments to prevention, participation, protection, to amplifying the voices of people who traditionally don't have that much of a role in these high-level spaces around peace and security. And yet there's been relatively little interaction between the two agendas in the past 5 years. So you look at, for example, some of the conversations around youth, peace and security, and there's a distinct lack of gender analysis and appreciation, for example, of the different experiences in conflict of young men, young women and gender non-conforming folk. Similarly, WPS discussions rarely explicitly draw out the distinct experiences of young women in conflict and the key role that lots of young women play in resolving conflict in their communities. And what OGIP argues is that this creates a real risk of siloing identities, where you have women and women's issues in this camp and then youth and youth issues in this camp. But where do the people who identify with bits of both of the agendas go? Actually, what tends to happen is that they fall through the gap in the middle, and neither agenda really addresses their concerns or actively supports their needs. What you'll find in a lot of these international policy spaces is that language is so important, and unless you have an explicit reference to certain identities or certain sort of touch points that you can really hook future policy and programming into, that creates a bit of a gap, and it creates sort of a challenge to pursue those agendas or pursue policies that really support those people going forward. So this is really where OGIP centres its approach and sees itself sort of filling a gap. We argue that more needs to be done to drive these agendas forward in a way that strengthens their joint aims and explicitly acknowledges the need for an intersectional approach between YPS and WPS. What we also argue there, and it's really important, is that resolving current gaps in the language and framing of these two agendas does not just mean bringing them together, but means that there has to be a fundamental challenge to the assumptions that underlie both of the agendas and the systems in which they both operate. So to make these points, for example, to push these points forward, OGIP published a policy paper looking at the intersect of YPS and WPS, and making recommendations on how to avoid replicating the exclusionary structures in their implementation. We've hosted civil society consultation on what we really mean by meaningful participation and how we can facilitate meaningful participation of marginalised groups. And we're advocating for diverse youth participation in all peace and security spaces, not just those focused on youth issues, for example.
Thanks so much for that. And connecting to that slightly, like you're saying about the gap between these agendas and the actual implementation, what would you say are the main challenges in combating these current colonial and patriarchal structures? and how does OGIP go about doing that?
Yeah, it's a really good question and a huge one. I think what it comes down to is it's all about power, and power is both the challenge and the solution. So international structures and the power dynamics that support the current system very much remain intact in the aims of both WPS and YPS agendas. And it's these very structures that continue to limit who has access to the influential peace and security spaces. And more than that, whose contribution to these spaces is considered as valid and valuable. So there is a real need for a space in which young people can challenge the current structures that are failing to achieve true inclusivity without needing to be waited to be invited to participate, without needing to fit their ideas into an agenda that the international community has decided is a priority to push. And linked to this is very much the challenge of access to these spaces and to these conversations where the power is held. So I think at this point, it's really important for me to acknowledge my own positionality in this conversation. So I am a white, heterosexual, British woman with a good education, and that identity, that background gives me enormous privilege and huge amounts of power, which facilitates my access or my entry into these spaces where these conversations are held. So I can speak the language of the international organizations. I can use the terminology that other practitioners are using. In normal times, I have a passport to travel the world and to sort of visit other contexts and learn and participate in these conversations. And I have access to the internet, which is a huge barrier for a lot of young people in gaining access to these spaces and being able to contribute their own ideas and experiences and perspectives. And then it's not just about getting in the door. So once you're in the meeting, how is your contribution then valued, and how is it perceived? Are you considered legitimate enough? Are you considered an expert? And that is hugely shaped by your identity and by the role that you're sort of perceived to have in these contexts. A lot of the time you'll hear practitioners sort of talking about local knowledge as being anecdotal. You know, we've heard anecdotal evidence from civil society organizations, or our partners have been telling us this, but what we need to do is commission a university in a Western country to do the research and then tell us if it's actually true or not, because expertise is valued in a very different way. So what the challenge then is finding the balance of working within the system whilst trying to challenge the very structures that underpin the system at the same time. And I think this is a really, really crucial point for a lot of young people around the world. A couple of years ago, for example, there was a report commissioned on the Youth Peace and Security Agenda, the progress report. And what it found was that young people all around the world who are active in these peace and security spaces were very clear that participation and inclusion are not unconditional. So inclusion in corrupt, undemocratic, oppressive systems is not valid. It's not an option that is acceptable to most young people working in these spaces. What is needed is a transformational shift in terms of how these spaces operate, as well as allowing or enabling young people to be able to access them. And OGIP really has this at the center of its mission. So we shouldn't assume that by including young voices in elite spaces, that will meet youth needs, nor will it resolve fundamental inequalities. By merely maintaining the structures and asking youth voices or women's voices or young women's voices to adapt to the current status quo, the system is failing to adapt and progress itself. What we need is a space in which young people in all of their diversity can champion their work and amplify each other's voices. And so OGIP really hopes to be able to raise awareness of what those needs are and where those expertise already lie. There are so many young people doing fantastic work who really are experts in peace and security, who have enormous amounts to further contribute. So it's about platforming their voices, amplifying what they're already saying, and all the time keeping in sight the need for that fundamental reform in the long term.
Thank you so much. It's so incredible what you guys are doing as well. And yeah, just so how complex the situation is, it's really great to be doing things involved in the power structures as well, but combating at the same time. Fascinating. So moving on as well, why is it that you feel it's so important to, you've already mentioned about how these voices within certain power structures aren't being seen as legitimate and why you need to triumph them, but why personally do you feel it's so important, and what do you feel the impact is of these voices on peace and security policy?
So there are a number of reasons. First of all, because young people, including young women, are already doing this work. They play such an important role in a number of contexts to advance more inclusive peace already. And recognizing the value of that work, acknowledging that it's happening, is really important and is transformational in and of itself. So, I mean, in my own experience, I've worked with young people, for example, in Northeast Nigeria, who are mediating community level conflicts, who are advocating for non-violent resolutions, who are supporting peers to reintegrate into the community from armed groups, who are holding security actors to account. You know, they're really active in all levels of peace building and conflict resolution. And I mean, more recently, I guess, here in the UK as well, you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, and the protests that took place this summer. And young women are at the forefront of these movements. They are leading and demanding inclusive peace and security from structural violence and institutional racism. And so it's not about sort of enabling people to do this work, because the work is already being done. It's about pointing the people with the funding, the people with the decision-making power in that direction, saying, look, this is transformational, this is radical and incredible work, and this is where our attention needs to be focused, because we have so much to learn from people, from young people all around the world doing this kind of work. And then secondly, it's important to hear these voices to sort of increase the inclusivity of these spaces, because it works. So inclusion is essential for sustainable and positive peace. Research found, for example, that peace agreements are 35% more likely to last 15 years or more when women are included in the peace negotiations. And so many conflicts are driven by grievances relating to things like marginalization, perceived inequalities, people in communities feeling like their voices are ignored, their needs go unmet and are dismissed. And when people have no recourse to peaceful mechanisms to demand change, then they're more likely to turn towards violence as a solution or as a means of having their voices heard. And that violent conflict is very often vulnerable to manipulation by elite power interests. So without diversity and inclusion in peace and security, without platforming these voices, we're failing to meet the needs of those most affected by conflict, and the effectiveness of the international community's ability to respond is completely undermined. What OGIP is doing is, by platforming the work of young people around the world, we really hope we can raise awareness of their crucial contributions to peace, highlight their innovative ways of working, and facilitate better support for young people in this space. And we're doing that through things like publishing blogs or spoken word pieces or longer research pieces by young people who are carrying out this work on a daily basis on the issues that they think are most pressing. And then we're trying to amplify that content and use those messages, use those themes that are emerging from this vast array of research and thought pieces to really shape our own advocacy messages to these international institutions.
Thanks so much. That's really interesting as well. I was just going to say, you mentioned a lot of the time how it's just a case of amplifying these voices, but at the same time, it's these power structures not recognising the legitimacy. So that leads nicely onto my next question, which was about recognising the difficulty in shifting current perceptions in these structures and the fact that your organisation is just under a year old. Could you tell me about your work and what you've been able to achieve so far?
I would love to. So I guess there are two ways of responding to this question. As you say, we're a really young organisation, so we We officially launched in October 2019, so less than a year ago. And in preparing for our launch, we did a huge amount of thinking around the structures of the organisation and how we wanted to operate to make sure that we weren't replicating the patriarchal structures that we were trying to critique. So I might talk a little bit about that first and then talk about sort of some of the more externally facing stuff that we've been able to do in the last few months. So yeah, as I said, we've been really intentional in the way that we've set up our structure to make sure that we really embed intersectional feminist principles in the way that we work. So we're youth-led and we're a non-hierarchical organisation, which means that there is no leader. I guess you could say we're a leader-full organisation. And what that means is that we put a lot of emphasis on collaborative decision-making, on creating the spaces to voice different ideas and concerns and empowering one another in the group to take on innovations or to really take the lead on various different tasks. And there are inevitably challenges with that that we're sort of working through. But what it feels like is this really exciting experiment in a new way of having an organizational structure. And as our first step in that, we developed these intersectional feminist working principles, which we use to guide our decision making and to make sure that we put equality and inclusion at the very core of our operating model. So what we didn't want to be was an organization that, you know, we set up a way of working, we set up all these structures, and then 3-4 years down the line, we thought, oh, you know what, we should probably do a bit more to make sure we've got diversity in the organisation and then retroactively fit those policies into a structure that already existed. That was what we wanted to avoid. We wanted to make sure that from the very, very beginning, from the first thoughts, everything we do puts equality, diversity, inclusion at the heart of the way that we work. And so with these principles, what we can do is use them in all of our decision making. We go back to them on a regular basis and sort of check, make sure that what we're doing aligns with those principles and also that those principles are still fit for purpose. So another key aspect of what we consider to be an intersectional feminist organization is this constant process of reflection and learning. We know that we won't get it right 100% of the time, but we are committed to making sure that we learn, that we're making sure that we acknowledge when we do get things wrong and that we do everything we can to adapt and to put that right. And so by going back to our working principles and making sure that they're still fit for purpose, we allow ourselves that space and that opportunity to really reflect on what we're trying to achieve. So then in terms of our work and what we're doing externally, ODIP is structured across three main pillars of work. So that's research, advocacy, and outreach and partnerships. And we really see those three things as essential tools for advancing inclusive peace and security. So I've mentioned a couple of the things that we're doing in these areas already, but I'll briefly touch on them again. So our research pillar supports young people to publish their thoughts, experiences, ideas on how to advance inclusive peace and security through a blog and through a research series. So most recently, we've finished a blog series called Youth Voices on COVID, which had 10 fantastic pieces on a range of different topics from refugee rights to the need for young people to be engaged in humanitarian responses to decarceration in the United States, just to name a few of the themes that came up. And what this series showed us was that COVID-19 had really exacerbated inequalities within society at all levels, and that young people around the world are really presenting alternative ways of organizing and responding to this crisis that really need to be taken up in what can be a moment for radical upheaval if we want to see transformative change. Our advocacy pillar is our second sort of piece of the puzzle. And what we're doing in advocacy at the moment is looking to launch a youth advocates network, which will further amplify youth voices in peace and security spaces, as well as providing a professional and peer support network for young people in what can be a really challenging sector to be a part of. So We're hoping to launch that in the coming weeks and have applications open for that shortly. But as a precursor to the network and as an example of what we hope this network can build on, for example, is we had one of our members, OGIP members, Alia, who is an incredible woman from Egypt. We facilitated her participation in a global discussion hosted by the Global Focal Points Network for Women, Peace and Security, which was really an opportunity for a new and distinct voice to be part of these broad global conversations on women, peace and security, and to bring a crucial youth perspective to this conversation. So we really hope that by launching this network, we'll be able to facilitate more opportunities such as that one. And then last but not least is our outreach and partnerships strategy. So we really consider collaboration and partnerships to be a fundamental part of feminist organizing. So it's really important to be sort of bridging the silos and not working independently or in a sort of defensive, this is my policy area sort of way, but really looking at how we can each amplify each other's work and support each other's work to strengthen the connections between them. So we've been working recently with Women of Colour Advancing Peace and Security, WCAPS, which is a fantastic organisation. And we've signed, for example, their solidarity statement on tackling racism and discrimination in the peace and security sector, and are working with them to sort of integrate youth perspectives into some of their work, and equally learning from them about how to tackle racism and inequality in our own work. So these are just some of the pieces that we're working on at the moment, and it's been a really fantastic nine or 10 months of exploring these issues and these challenges, and we're really, really excited about what's to come.
Yeah, listening to you talk, it's so exciting. You've got so much going on all at once. It's so great as well, those core principles, just so important and such a fresh way of doing development. I liked the term leaderful, so no leadership.
I can't take credit for that, actually. That came from the Black Lives Matter movement in the States. So, that's where I got that from.
Yeah, no, it's great. And so many things going on right now. I really like the COVID-19 pieces. It's great to be getting the different perspectives on that as well and on current issues.
Absolutely. And young people are really at the heart of a lot of these conversations, but it isn't necessarily being heard. And so we hope that we can be a small part of changing that and challenging that.
Yeah, even just having the blog, like having a space to share those ideas and for people to actually be listening to them. Yeah, it's just fantastic. And that leads me on to my final question, unfortunately, because I love chatting with you. But yeah, I'm sure many listeners like myself, after hearing what you've spoken about, would love to get involved with Our Generation for Inclusive Peace and what you're getting up to. So what opportunities do you have and how can people get involved?
Yeah, so I'd say the two main things to look out for at the moment are the network that I mentioned, so the Youth Advocates Network. So we're hoping to launch applications for that in the next week or two. And we're really hoping to build something new and exciting through this network. We'll be looking for founding members of the network, so people who are really excited about shaping the future of the network and what this network can do and the way it can operate. So we want to be really led by our members rather than, again, imposing a structure. So anybody who, you know, is committed to advancing inclusive peace and security from anywhere in the world, and we really want to ensure that there's geographic diversity and representation in this network, please keep an eye out and put in an application. And then a second way to be involved is through our research and blog series. So we'll be putting out a call for proposals soon on a research series focusing on sexual violence and conflict. But we're also taking submissions for shorter blog pieces on any topic relating to peace and security on a rolling basis. And And I think it's really important actually here to emphasize that what we want is to share content in really diverse mediums. So if you're an artist or a poet, a photographer, a musician, a spoken word performer, a blogger, and you have something to say about peace and security, then please get in touch. So, I mean, one of the biggest barriers to diverse voices in this sector is this expectation of using academic language and written formats to have these conversations. And so we want to challenge the idea of what an expert looks like, and we think that more creative ways of expression are just as valid and just as valuable as other formats. So if you have something that you want to share, if you've got any thoughts, then please do get in touch. Our Twitter handle is @OurGemPiece, or you can email us at ogipcontact@gmail.com, and we'd be really excited to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I wish I was better at art, because that sounds really cool. A really creative way of getting involved as well. So Ruby, thanks so much for joining us on our podcast today. I really, really enjoyed speaking to you. For any listeners wanting to find out more about this fantastic organisation, just head over to their website. And as Ruby mentioned earlier, they've also got a Twitter @OurGenPiece. We've attached links to Our Generation for Inclusive Peace's website, where all their blog posts are, as well as our own, if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about who we are and what we do. This has been Caitlin Smith for Oxford Society for International Development. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I have. Make sure to join us next time.